Me gustaría que cubra la realidad de los pueblos originarios en Chile, lo que está pasando allá.
Correcto. Empecemos por el pueblo mapuche. El pueblo mapuche vive en los territorios controlados por el Estado chileno y por el Estado argentino. La región del territorio mapuche se llama el Huaymapu. Los mapuches se enfrentaron con mucha fuerza a los españoles cuando llegaron al sur y los españoles nunca los derrotaron. Fueron los chilenos, los del Estado chileno, después los que entraron a controlar el territorio mapuche, distribuyeron de las tierras, etcétera. Igualito que sucedió en Estados Unidos cuando los blancos comenzaron a andar hacia el oeste a controlar. No fueron los invasores, sino que fueron los propios estadounidenses instalados allí los que luego fueron acabando con la autonomía y la autodeterminación de la comunidad originaria. Lo mismo pasó en el territorio mapuche con la República Chilena.
Okay.
Puede traducir si quiere.
The Mapuches are in a territory controlled by the governments of Chile and Argentina. The Waymapu was never defeated by the Spanish conquistadors, but it was the Chilean government that finally did the oppression, and the Argentine government that did the oppression, the massacring, just like here in this country. It was the new country, so-called America, that did that to the indigenous people here.
Sí, profesor. Hola.
En el día de hoy, los mapuches, después de la dictadura militar, comenzaron a reorganizarse y están en un proceso de recuperación de tierras y de reconstrucción de su identidad. Han ocupado varias haciendas, varias fincas y han creado una coordinadora de identidades territoriales de diferentes comunidades situadas algunas a la orilla del mar, otras en los bosques, otras más al sur, etcétera. Y eso está siendo hoy perseguido por el Estado chileno y tienen a varios dirigentes mapuche presos. ¿Puede traducir?
Today the Mapuches are reorganizing and they're trying to get their land back. They have been occupying land that, according to the invader government and society, belongs to ranchers, and they are organized in what they call coordinadora de identidades from different parts in Chile. And many of their leaders are being persecuted, and they have been imprisoned.
Sí, profesor, adelante.
¿Podemos seguir?
Sí, por favor. Sí,
¿Aló?
adelante, hola. Profesor, ¿me escucha?
¿Puedo seguir?
Sí, por favor, siga.
Ya. Estas distintas colectividades mapuches que se han ido coordinando han ido influyendo fuertemente hasta los mapuches de las ciudades. Por ejemplo, los jóvenes estudiantes mapuches se han organizado y ellos han salido mucho a la calle, han levantado barricadas para ir reivindicando sus derechos como pueblo-nación. Ellos están hoy día levantando todas las comunidades mapuches, algunas no tanto, es un proceso, están levantando su proyecto de autodeterminación, porque ellos se consideran un pueblo como el pueblo vasco o como el pueblo palestino. Puede traducir.
Okay. The different Mapuche organizations, collectives, are influencing the urban Mapuches in the city, especially their urban indigenous youth that is rising up and trying to vindicate their people. And they are taking on this project of self-determination because they consider themselves as people under siege, just like the Basque people and the Palestinian people.
Sí, adelante.
¿Sí?
Sí.
Entonces, eso es lo que sucede hoy con el pueblo nación mapuche. Ellos están consiguiendo hacer una gran contribución al proceso de reorganización de distintos sectores sociales chilenos. Y eso ha sido muy importante para todos nosotros en Chile y también en Argentina. traducen?
The Mapuches are contributing to the Chilean and Argentine reorganization, and this has been a very important contribution.
Sí, adelante.
Sí. Entonces, esto que sucede con el pueblo nación Mapuche. En el caso de Ecuador, existe la organización de la CONADI, Confederación Nacional Indígena del Ecuador, que, cuya característica es que ellos se organizan por localidades, y en esas localidades han ido ganando municipios, y por tanto han ido consiguiendo consolidar una fuerte organización de base en diferentes territorios ecuatorianos. ¿Puede traducir?
In Ecuador, there's the CONER, the organization, the National Organization of Indigenous Peoples, and they are organizing locally, but they have slowly been gaining power in the different municipalities.
Sí. Sí, profesor. Ah. Adelante.
Sí. También en diferentes regiones del Perú y en diferentes regiones de otros países como Paraguay o también Brasil, las distintas comunidades originarias han comenzado también un proceso de organización. ¿A qué se debe este proceso de reorganización de los pueblos originarios? En parte se debe a la dureza del Estado, esa natural, pero que esa dureza viene muchos años. Eso obedece a que el Estado ha ido cambiando su rol, el Estado ha ido cambiando su papel. El libre mercado de hoy no necesita a los Estados para administrar lo económico, sino que más bien lo usa a los Estados para la represión. Pero los Estados hoy no pueden, como los tiempos de welfare state, los tiempos del Estado de bienestar, ya los Estados no pueden ya estar distribuyendo riqueza a sectores pobres, como hacían antes, de manera paternalista y socialdemócrata. Entonces existe una mayor marginación hoy día. Esa enorme marginalidad llega con mucha fuerza a los sectores, a los pueblos originarios, que tienen un base histórico y una tradición para poder reconstruir y salvar su vida. Entonces ellos están reconstruyendo sus comunidades al margen de la institucionalidad, al margen del sistema, aunque algunos mantienen ciertas relaciones con los sistémicos, con las instituciones. Si quiere, puede traducir ahora.
Okay. In Peru, Paraguay, Brazil, the same processes are taking place of reorganization of the first peoples. And we can ask ourselves, why is this happening now? And the short answer is because of oppression, the long oppression that they have suffered. And also because the role of the state has changed in this free global market. The state does not have the power anymore to distribute wealth. And this leads to an even more marked marginalization of all the peoples, but especially the original peoples. And this is why now that they have, they're rising up to reconstruct their own societies at the margin of society.
Sí, adelante. Profesor?
Sí, en Colombia, por ejemplo, hay comunidades que han quedado en el medio de la guerra. Por un lado el Estado y por otro lado las guerrillas, que han pasado por sus territorios, han creado problemas, han matado gente diciendo que son colaboradores del otro. Entonces ese factor ha sido muy fuerte para el proceso de autonomía de las comunidades colombianas. Estos últimos meses varias comunidades originarias de Colombia han ocupado territorios y están levantando lo que ellos llaman el plan de vida, es decir, cómo relacionarse entre ellos, cómo relacionarse con la naturaleza, rescatando sus tradiciones históricas y culturales y espirituales. ¿Puede traducir?
In Colombia also, there's many original communities that are caught between the state and the guerrilla, and they have suffered a lot, and they have been victims of a lot of killing, and this has led to their process of autonomy going on right now. For example, this week in Colombia, a lot of several communities have taken over land, and they have started their plan de vida. It's a life plan to rescue their culture, their traditions.
Sí, adelante, profesor. Hola.
¿Ah?
Sí, ya estoy lista. ¿Profesor? ¿Me puede?
¿Sí?
Sí, sí, adelante.
Podemos seguir entonces. En Centroamérica, en el caso de Guatemala, estos últimos meses han habido una serie de formas de organización, paralizaciones de regiones, ocupaciones de tierra y ocupaciones de instituciones del Estado por parte de las comunidades originarias de Guatemala. Lo mismo podemos ver en Honduras, donde los Garifuna han organizado la coordinadora de los Garifuna, que son alrededor de 24 organizaciones que tienen una coordinación territorial. Los Garifuna de Honduras.
In Central America, this is also happening. In the last few months in Guatemala, there has been occupation of land and of government institutions by original peoples. And in Honduras, there is 24 organizations that are also rising up.
Sí, profesor, adelante.
Sí. Entonces, más o menos eso da una pincelada de cómo están las comunidades originarias a nivel continental levantándose con el ejemplo zapatista y levantándose con el ejemplo de su propia historia, de sus tradiciones. Esto es lo que nosotros llamamos la reconstrucción del ser social comunitario, la reconstrucción del ser social gregario, la reconstrucción del carácter gregario del ser social, porque nosotros somos esencialmente gregarios, comunitarios. Y en esta sociedad patriarcal, vertical, autoritaria, etcétera, nos separan y se nos niega la base esencial de la vida comunitaria. Entonces, las comunidades originarias nos están mostrando cómo es la vida en común, cómo es lo que algunos llaman comunismo, y cómo ya no es necesario el discurso de lo ideológico, lo teórico, lo estratégico, para poder avanzar hacia la sociedad sin clase, sino que más bien se trata de la vuelta a nuestras raíces humanas, nuestras raíces comunitarias, y por eso nosotros pensamos la importancia de la organización en barrios y campos. ¿Puede traducir?
Okay, so this is a broad view of what's happening with the original peoples in this continent, south of the border, who are following the Zapatista example and their own history. And they're going back to reconstructing what we really are as social beings, community-based, gregarious social beings. And the current powers in the world that are patriarchal, vertical, authoritarian are totally opposed to our true human nature that draws us to life in community, communism. And it's not necessary anymore to use the discourse of theory and philosophy of communism. We just need to go back to our roots, our community roots.
Hello?
Sí,
profesor.
Bueno,
tengo que salir a la calle porque ya terminó la actividad y está mucho el ruido de los vehículos.
Bueno,
estoy terminando con esta parte de la pedagogía, ¿dices tú?
Sí, sí.
Porque mira cómo está, estoy con problemas, ahora estoy andando en la calle porque ahora tengo que irme.
Okay, como usted lo desea.
Personas con las cuales vamos ahora a otra cosa. ¿Te parece si podemos ir terminando y hablar un poco de educación alternativa?
Sí, por favor, adelante.
Entonces, hazme la pregunta.
Professor Jay is now going to talk about alternative education, which is another one of his strengths and the thing that he's spreading out in Chile and probably in a lot of other countries.
No, me interesó mucho lo que vi en su sitio de web, en su hoja, en su página, de una rebelión a la educación, a la pedagogía que se usa en casi todo el mundo. Nosotros lo vemos mucho, vemos el efecto que tiene en nuestros niños y adolescentes indígenas, cómo les matan el espíritu, porque no es solamente la pedagogía que usan, sino también el material que les enseñan que son gente muerta y que no valen nada. Es muy racista la historia y las cosas que son más implícitas también que les transmiten a nuestros hijos. Sí, ¿cuál es su pensamiento sobre esto y cuál es su teoría? ¿Cómo se puede, cuál es la alternativa?
La pedagogía se ha entendido normalmente como transmisión. Es decir, hay un centro donde está el saber, la luz, y hay gente que no tiene el saber, que son los sin luz. Con eso se parte de una base de segregación, de separación y de dominación. Nosotros hablamos que existen los saberes sociales. Nosotros hablamos de que la gente en los barrios y los campos tienen su propia cultura. Y nosotros pensamos que la pedagogía ya no puede ser más transmitir píldoras de saber elitista sintetizado en píldoras que la ideología y la cultura dominante van introduciendo en la población, en la gente. Nosotros pensamos que el proceso pedagógico debe ser un proceso de construcción del propio saber por parte de la gente y la población. ¿Sí?
Sí.
Ok.
Sí, estoy traduciendo ahora.
Entonces, nosotros pensamos que la pedagogía debe ser construida no transmitiendo, sino conversando con la gente en el barrio, reconstruyendo su historia, su memoria histórica, y que entre ellos en conjunto puedan ir haciendo conciencia de su propio cuerpo, de su propia realidad. Y en esa conversación, en ese diálogo horizontal entre muchas personas, se construye y se reproduce el saber social, ya no transmitiendo, sino que el saber del sujeto histórico que asume la conciencia de la experiencia del sufrimiento y de la vida que llevan en sus cuerpos. ¿Está bien?
Sí.
¿Aló?
Sí, sí. Un momentito, ahora voy a traducir.
Ya. ¿Podemos cerrar ahora? Estoy en un lugar que está muy malo.
Sí, cómo no, profesor. Entonces me despido y ahora, en cuanto cuelgo, traduzco y nos mantenemos en contacto. Apreciamos muchísimo su tiempo y sus palabras, sus pensamientos.
Está bien. Muchas gracias.
Bueno, hasta la próxima. Adiós.
Ciao. Okay, the last bit was about teaching, learning, pedagogy. And I think here on Free Radio Olympia, there is a program that talks about the unschooling. So I'm giving a shout out to my fellow airshifters here. So you can check that out. But our interest from the indigenous point of view is finding new ways of teaching our children, because we see the damage that is done to them in the schools in this country and throughout the continent, not only from the what the pedagogy that invades the schools and the school institution itself, but also what is added in the racist history and the undertones of the way they are taught. And that is the effect in the indigenous children is it totally kills their spirits. So Professor Jay, in his website, talks a lot about different ways of teaching. And what he just said, when I asked him for this, what are his suggestions, the different ways of teaching our people. And he said that the pedagogic methods are of transmission, and where there is a center of knowledge, of light, and then the ones that don't know go there to get enlightened. And there is... The teachers are the ones that know, the students are the ones that don't know, and that is the difference. And the method and the message is of segregation, of oppression, of elitism. The alternative education is that everybody has their own culture to share, and that the dominant culture cannot be introducing what is called culture, what is called knowledge. but that it has to be a process of building by talking to each other, by reconstructing our historical memories, and being conscious of, becoming conscious of who we are, and that the dialogue has to be horizontal to achieve a knowledge as social subjects, social historical subjects that assume, become conscious of who we are and all the historical pain that makes us and our people. And that was our conversation with Professor Jay from the Clahavep La Ain Network. And again, his website is http://clajadep.lahaine.org. And he's based out of Santiago, Chile. I hope you enjoyed this. We will keep bringing different voices from throughout the continent that cover subjects that are relevant to the indigenous people.
Aquellos cerros vengo, negra querida, a buscar los despojos del alma mía. Y aquellos cerros vengo, negra querida, a buscar los despojos del alma mía. Fresquita y ansiosa, vidita, y yo te la entregué. Tú la destrozaste, vidita, y yo no sé por qué. La, 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 la. La ra y la ra, ya que yo se robé, negra querida. Este ponchito mío de tres colores, me dice que no fíe de tus amores. Este ponchito mío de tres colores, me dice que no fíe de tus amores. Palomita ingrata, vidita, y has pagado mal. Córtate las alas, vidita, y deja de volar. La, 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 la. Y aquellos cerros vengo, paloma mía.
Twenty-three in the morning, and I'm awake because my great-great-grandchildren won't let me sleep. My great-great-grandchildren ask me in dreams, what did you do while the planet was plundered? What did you do when the earth was unraveling? Surely you did something when the seasons started failing, as the mammals, reptiles, and birds were all dying. Did you fill the streets with protest when democracy was stolen? What did you do once you knew? I'm riding home on the Colma train. I'm riding home on the Colma train. I've got the voice of the Milky Way in my dreams. I have teams of scientists feeding me data daily and pleading I immediately turn it into poetry. I want just this consciousness reached by people in range of secret frequencies contained in my speech. I am the desirous earth, equidistant to the underworld and the flesh of the stars. I am everything already lost. The moment the universe turns transparent and all the light shoots through the cosmos, I use words to instigate silence. I'm a hieroglyphic stairway in a buried Mayan city, suddenly exposed by a hurricane, a satellite circling Earth, finding dinosaur bones in the Gobi Desert. I am telescopes that see back in time. I am the precession of the equinoxes, the magnetism of the spiraling sea. I'm riding home on the coma train with the voice of the Milky Way in my dreams. I am myths where violets blossom from blood like dying and rising gods. I'm the boundary of time, soul encountering soul and tongues of fire. It's 3:23 in the morning. And I'm awake because my great-great-grandchildren won't let me sleep. My great-great-grandchildren ask me in dreams, what did you do when the earth was unraveling? I want just this consciousness reach by people in range of secret frequencies contained in my speech.
A Spanish prisoner given a chance to be free as a conquistador finds himself in the so-called new world without a Spanish woman and among conquest subjects already perceived as subhuman. He picks and chooses an indigenous woman. He rapes her and has children. These children he does not care for as they are half-human. He beats a woman when she refuses his orders. He abuses her children when he wants to and when they get in his way. And now 502 years later, the descendants of the ultimate dysfunctionalism, a blueprint for the colonized. 7 generations of cycle of illness, of people without heads, without an identity, without a direction, without an understanding, and without a connection. Torn from their mother and raped by their father, now lost in a sea of white, they begin to recover, recognize their identity and connection to these roots. These roots that run deep. Deep in the soul of our mother, 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 deep in the soul of our mother.
Thank you.
Aztlan Underground. You're listening to the Tashunka Wetko Brigade out of Free Radio Olympia, which will be replayed on Friday evening. So check it out if you missed the show. We had a great interview all the way from Santiago, Chile. Before Aztlan Underground, you heard the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area poet Drew Dillinger with a beautiful poem. And now, before we close, my co-host, Subcomandante Wambli Watajpe, is going to make some comments and bring everything together that we have heard today. We got a pretty good brushstroke of the indigenous peoples rising in this continent south of us. And here he is.
Oh, that was a really good song. Thank you, Tanya. That was a song called My Blood is Red, and I was just thinking, I'd like to see what color their blood is for once. Seems like our blood has been flowing like enough to fill up 14 oceans. And I don't see enough of the oppressor's blood. I don't see enough of so-called deprivation and the underbelly of life revisiting our shores too much, visiting them at all. And if that's the policies that they're going to try to perpetuate, then I want none of it. Speaking in a comment about Professor Jay's statement about communism. He wasn't talking about communism in the sense of the Cold War capitalist communism discussion, debate, Cold War. But he was talking about a traditional concept of communion between the tribes of the world. And between the communion between the tribes and the world, and the world of tribes with the universe. And in that sense, if the truth be known, Karl Marx wrote his Communist Manifesto based on this concept, of which he readily acknowledges. And so, even the concept of communism versus the so-called good quality of capitalism is itself a myth. And the concept of good capitalism, there is, under this construct, never been a good concept of capitalism. And so, when we're talking about these terms, we're talking about them in an indigenous sense, just like the term democracy, just like all of these terms, even the term of capitalism, all inspired, all created, the innovation provided by the indigenous society. And not only was it just any indigenous society, as it turns out, it was the indigenous society from which Evo Morales has sprung forward, has, as they said, been anointed, acknowledged by the Creator in his own election. It wasn't like the elections, like the polities of elitism and campaigning that we have grown accustomed to, that we think up here is the only way to organize. This is just one way of people coming together. There are many other ways. This particular way that they organize in this country happens to be the most limiting way. It calls for the most work with the fewest return. Not only in terms of the work itself, but also the results. When we work this hard to get rid of George Bush to put in Kerry, we don't really get that much of a difference. So if we really want to do political work with the people, we have to go and listen to the people. And if we really want to find out what they want or what is wanted, it is only from this consensus that we're going to be able to come up with these solutions. Having said all of that and trying to bring that into some sort of a little bit more clearer picture for you, because I know the colonial fog and the colonial minds of the masses out there, you're not going to get this. So we have to provide counseling for, set at my clinic, colonial deprogramming to help you understand what's going on in terms of all of this. But I wanted to share with you this book. It's been around for a while, and many of you probably read it. I encourage you to reread it again. It's by Jack Weatherford, called The Indian Givers. And it starts off with at the beginning. And it was copyrighted in 1988 for all of you colonial scholars out there in the world of pleasurism. And the only reason why you are so concerned about copyright and pleasurism is so that you can get the dime, not somebody else. That's the only reason. As you actually think about it, there's no original thought ever in all of the many thousands of years of evolution. There's no thought that you could have thought of that hasn't been thought of somewhere else before. And probably put into practice, but that's for all you arrogant guys out there. I think you, the American people, are you listening to me? Okay, here we go. Chapter 1. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I just want to read you a couple pages. Bear with me. I'm going to close with this this pearl here. I'm giving you pearls here. Each morning at 5:30, Rodrigo Cepedes eats two rolls and drinks a cup of tea heavily laced with sugar before he slings his ratty Adidas gym bag over his shoulder and leaves for work. Rodrigo lives in Potosi, the world's highest city, perched in the Bolivian Andes at an elevation of 13,680 feet above sea level. At this altitude, Rodrigo stays warm only when he holds himself directly in the sunlight, but at this early in the morning, the streets are still dark. He walks with other men going in the same direction, but like most Quechua and Amari Indians, they walk along silently. The loudest sounds come from the scraping noise of two old women who laboriously sweep the streets each morning. Bent over their short straw brooms, these women look like medieval witches dressed in the traditional black garments woven in Potosi in a stall, and the tall black hats native to the area. Rodrigo reaches the main road and joins a line behind 40 to 50 men, waiting to board one of the dilapidated but once brightly painted buses that leave the plaza 10 de Novembre at quarter before the hour. In the dawning light, he stands across the street from a small dump in which a handful of old women, two dozen snarling dogs, and a few children fight over unrecognizable chunks of food in their daily battle for garbage. When he finally boards the bus, Rodrigo squeezes agilely into the dense pack of silent and stooped men. Very slowly, the old bus begins its labored climb up Cerro Rico, the mountain towering over the city. After ascending the mountain for only a few minutes, the bus passes the entrance to the original colonial mine founded on Cerro Rico in 1545. Workers long ago boarded it shut after exhausting that vein, and then they moved to higher veins, more difficult and less profitable to the mine. After another 20 minutes and 100 meters rise in elevation, he passes the dilapidated entrance to the massive government-operated tin mine and the scene of many bloody confrontations between miners and management. Once owned by the Tin King, Simon Patino, These men were nationalized by a revolutionary regime of Victor Paz Estenssoro after the revolution in 1952. And now, Comimbo, a government-owned and highly unprofitable company, operates them as a way to keep the miners' leftist union tranquil. The bus chokes to its first stop at the mine opening, and most of the men leave the bus. Even though the bus has less than half a load now, the old engine wheezes and belches up thick black diesel fumes as it struggles on to an altitude of 14,000 feet. Few vehicles anywhere operate at a higher altitude, and this bus probably plies the highest daily bus route in the world. Barely able to climb any higher, the bus coasts to a stop near the Heart of Jesus, a large abandoned church covered with graffiti and filled with the strong smell of stale urine, all topped by a giant concrete Jesus. The edifice and its large statue jut out on a cliff a little over halfway up the mountain. Here, Rodrigo and the remaining men leave the bus, which then descends for another load. Without a glance at the Heart of Jesus and without raising his eyes toward the immense mountain above him, Rodrigo begins to climb the long familiar path. For the next 2 hours, he looks only at his feet, and he keeps his chin tucked into his jacket, and out of the mountain winds that whip around him in the freezing but bone-dry swirls, even though he is only a few degrees south of the equator, he does not need to look around. For as long as his legs are climbing up the mountain, he knows that he is heading in the right direction. He need not fear bumping into a tree, because he is far above the timberline, and because over the last 4 centuries, millions of brown hands have already removed every bush, weed, and blade of grass, searching for rocks with traces of silver, tin, tungsten, and bismuth in them. He need not worry about bumping into a large boulder, because generations of Indian workers have long since pounded, hammered, and shattered every boulder into millions of rocks smaller than a child's fist. He need not fear falling into a crevice, because women carrying baskets of rock and dirt have long ago filled in all the crevices with the refuse from 5,000 mines that have pierced Cerro Rico in the past 5 centuries. If Rodrigo did look up, he would see nothing but the endless pile of rusty brown rocks that he climbs every day. The monotony of the mountain face is interrupted only by the mine openings that pocket like the ravages of some terrestrial cancer. Rodrigo finally stops just short of the summit at 15,680 feet. The trip from his home below has taken 2.5 hours. He sits down just outside the mouth of the mine he works, opens his bag, and fishes out a flat, round roll like the ones he ate for breakfast. As he chews the roll, he looks down at the city spread out below him. Because the air is so crisp and clear at this dry altitude, he can clearly pick out the block of houses. Where he lives in a city of 100,000 people with lives much like his own, he is now half a mile above the city and 3 miles above the ocean, which, of course, he has never seen. In the distance, a small black ribbon of railroad track connects Potosi with the outside world, hauling the tin to Arica, the port on the Chilean coast of the Pacific. The line also connects Potosi to the capital of La Paz. Twice a week, passengers can ride the day trip to La Paz on a narrow-gauge railway, straining to cross the Condor Pass at 15,705 feet above sea level near Rio Mulato. A few hours out of Potosi, this train operates the world's highest passenger railway. But all of this is far removed from Rodrigo's life. Swallowing the last of his dry roll, he reaches deep inside his jacket and shirt and brings out his distinctively hand-woven chuspa, a brightly colored bag of coca leaves that he always keeps on a string around his neck. Picking a few leaves, he carefully inserts them one at a time, together with a little lime, into his mouth with a well-placed turn of his wrist. After only a few minutes of inactivity at this altitude, he begins to feel the cold, but the mildly narcotic effect produced by chewing the leaves will soon numb that. It will also alleviate his hunger, his thirst, and the sheer drudgery and monotony of his coming 8 hours in the mine. It will ease but not stop the pain, which slowly begins to torture him in the morning and by the close of shift has engulfed his whole body from head to toe. And that, I want to leave it there because this is probably the lifestyle of a lot of the people down in that part of the country. This mine, this mountain, Cerro Rico, provided the precious metals for the institution of what we now know as the capitalist system, with mainly its silver, but also gold. And as you heard, it was millions of indigenous people who have smoothed and paved and worked over the last 5 centuries. And the mine is still in operation, by the way, and the legacy of this mine to the colonial empire cannot be understated. It was devastating, the work that Rodrigo still does and many like him, and in unions that are in place only to keep them from revolting, is a statement in itself. And so this show will go out to Rodrigo. I don't know the man. I just read about him here on Jack Weatherford's book. And to all the people that struggle like him in places that we haven't even heard of yet. Tashinka Witko Brigade are getting ready to go off the air. We're turning it over to the main man here, Drew, and thank you for listening, and this is Fro at 98.5.